that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here around the table once again with the Pop Culture Happy Hour staff. Stephen Thompson, what do you do for NPR?
Well, I am an editor and writer with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the movies editor for NPR.org, and I noodle around in the background on Monkey See sometimes.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
Books, comic books. I write about them for the NPR website.
And you are just back from a little vacation you've been kind enough to write about on Twitter.
The word is weekended. I weekended in Nantucket.
Yes. You were the man from Nantucket.
I met plenty of very limber old men wiping
right.
their chins and grinning.
Right.
Yes. I met
right.
plenty of them.
Right. Nice. Well, it's good to know, but I am certainly glad that you are done weekending and were able to join us back here
in the
studio, mm-hmm. back here with the hoi polloi. So what we were going to start off with today was a little discussion of fall movies. We are now past Labor Day weekend, and the summer movies have given way to the fall movies. Now is the season of our discontent.
Now is the season of our more content.
No. Our more content is moviegoers, but our serious films, our depressing films set in, our Oscar contenders begin to arrive.
Our discontentedness,
exactly.
So you guys didn't like Mr. Popper's? All right. This is the good movie season.
No one in this room actually saw that movie, right?
No.
So, in fact, we retract whatever we just said about Mr. Popper's Penguins.
I didn't say anything about Mr. Popper's Penguins.
So, Glenn Weldon, what is on your fall movie list?
You know the movie Contagion coming up pretty soon. Seems like feel good. Feel lousy.
Yeah, people keep telling me, like, no, it's not terrible. It's this incredibly realistic story of a terrible world-ending pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, yeah.
Yeah, I probably won't see it. I mean, yes, I like that it's in the tradition of the Irwin Allen films of the 70s, where you would just load up the screen with a lot of big Hollywood stars,
right.
and then in the poster, it would be a series of headshots running across the bottom that would always end with, and E.G. Marshall as the president. I like that this is going, and as much as I enjoyed the film Country Strong, because in it, somebody wrestles a liquor bottle out of Gwyneth Paltrow's bony arms, and it smashes against the wall of the double wide.
Yeah.
Yes! I don't feel any great need to watch her sicken unto death. I mean,
yeah.
I
well,
just basically look like
know,
she's not paying attention.
Would it make you feel better if she sickened unto death in the first few minutes?
No. I think it takes a while, right? I have no idea.
I think that's one of the kinder things I've heard said about Gwyneth Paltrow.
You people are terrible. I am here to defend Gwyneth. I like me some Gwyneth.
I'm fine with some Gwyneth. I was just saying, I think it's nice every once in a while to stop and say that I would prefer that this person not sicken unto death. And that is absolutely how I feel about Gwyneth Paltrow. And many, many other people.
We're filled with the spirit of generosity. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Glenn?
Sure. There's two directors who are coming out with films this fall who, you know, sometimes they go right, sometimes when they go wrong. But when they go wrong, they always go wrong in interesting ways. The first one is Gus Van Sant, who has a film coming out called Restless. Here's the precis. Quirky girl with cancer meets boy obsessed with death, and they keep encountering the ghost of a Japanese kamikaze pilot from World War II. Now.
Another story like that.
You're right, it is a Gus Van Sant.
From that description, it sounds like the worst episode of Scooby-Doo ever, directed by Diablo Cody. It's just the tweeest of the twee. It's a twee falling in the forest. But,
wow.
I mean, it's Gus Van Sant. It's going to be good. I mean, you know, it's going to be interesting.
Right.
It's going to be interesting more than...
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know that... It's Gus Van Sant, it's going to be good, is necessarily.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to watch. The other one is Pedro Almodovar is coming out with The Skin I Live In, about a plastic surgeon who invents a synthetic skin, and hijinks ensue. It looks like he's actually going in for a sort of a horror thriller genre. I've never seen him do that before. I'm not a big horror guy, but I know the film's going to look amazing.
Right.
In the trailer, Antonio Banderas looks so much like Cary Grant. He's bringing his Cary Grant on in a big way. Mm. So that's another vote in favor of this film.
We need a Cary Grant. And it's kind of Clooney.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the Clooney
role,
right?
It's basically Clooney. But, you know, if Clooney gets tired, we need another Cary Grant.
Yep,
that's true.
Well, I think those are interesting and good choices. Trey Graham, what is on your list, fall movie-wise?
Well, everybody's talking about Clooney in Ides of March, right? That's coming up soon-ish. I forget exactly when.
Yep, soon-ish.
That was on my list. That
political movie with Ryan Gosling, who's a campaign communications guy who gets him and or the candidate into trouble.
Right.
I believe,
who doesn't like a Ryan Gosling movie?
I like a Gosling.
Well, if you like a Gosling, there are about four Gosling movies coming out this fall, I think, between fall and winter. Margin Call.
Mm-hmm.
a sort of dramatization of, well, a fictional story, but sort of rooted in the events of the financial panic. Shady stock trading. Spock is the star. So,
well, Spock, so there's that. But more to the point, hero's guy.
Yes.
Hero's Siler. Villain, Siler. Yes. Hero, exactly.
There's a film called Anonymous coming out, which is a period drama. Vanessa Redgrave is playing Elizabeth the I.
Damn, these all, you guys are just taking all my choices.
Of course.
But
we
here's
are.
The thing, it's directed by Roland Emmerich. So this is kind of like your Gus Van Sant thing. It could be fantastic or it could be just a giant heaping pile of mess.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to find out which. There's a film called Carnage coming out that's sort of reimagining of the Yasmina Reza play that was on Broadway.
Oh, right, yes. I have been hearing some interesting stories about that lately. And that's the Roman Polanski. Yeah.
Yes, that is the Roman Polanski film with Jodie Foster standing in the part that Marcia Gay Harden had on stage. It's just not fair.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of fascinating smaller things that either I have sort of stumbled across or Bob Mondello has pointed out to me, helpfully in his 8-minute fall movie preview, which you can find at our website. There's a thing called My Week with Marilyn, which is generating gigantic buzz. It's about Marilyn Monroe when she's in England filming The Prince and the Showgirl with Laurence Olivier. It stars Kenneth Branagh as Olivier, and more notably, or at least as notably, it stars Michelle Williams, who's coming off of Blue Valentine and the Oscar nomination, and Wendy and Lucy, which got, you know, terrific notices. And it looks really stylish, what I've been able to see of it. I can't find a trailer for it anywhere, but the photos look terrific.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little film called Weekend, which is a British indie about two guys whose one-night stand turns into a weekend together, and it looks terrific based on the trailer. I've got a copy of the screener in my bag, and I haven't watched it yet, but Mondello, among other people, told me it was good. And finally, a psychological thriller that is generating a lot of talk about a breakout performance by a young actress named Elizabeth Olsen. It screened at Sundance. She had apparently never had much of a profile before in the business, despite being the younger sister of the Olsen twins.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently she just slayed people at Sundance with this performance. The film is called Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Mm-hmm. I looked at that one today, too. Yeah.
That's my short list. It's looking like an interesting fall.
Well, you've picked some interesting smaller movies that I think are a little more, you know, off the path probably than the ones that I'm likely to pick myself. But how about you, Stephen Thompson? Well, in the absence of Kung Fu Panda,
there does not seem to be an addition in the Kung Fu Panda franchise. I can't believe that neither Trey nor Glenn referenced Real Steel.
I know. Well,
we've talked about
Real Steel.
We've talked about it at some length. As I kind of had to go back and sort of scour little roundups of what's coming out. And what has amazed me is how many of the descriptions sound like tweets that Linda would write making up movies that she thinks might be coming out in the fall. For example, I give you Dolphin Tail.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
A dolphin whose tail is damaged in a crab trap is rescued and rehabilitated by a marine biologist, a prosthetics doctor, and a young boy.
Now, I would just like you to know, as I'm sure that everyone in the universe knows from just hearing that description, that this movie stars Morgan Freeman.
Yes, it does. How about this one?
As God.
Machine.
As the dolphin.
So here's Morgan Freeman as the dolphin. Click, click. Click. Beep, squeak. Squeak, beep.
Thank you.
Fa Love Ka. Day of the Dolphin. Have you seen it? Day of the Dolphin? No. Good movie.
Machine Gun Preacher.
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
A former drug dealer becomes a minister and establishes an orphanage for refugee child soldiers in Sudan with Gerard Butler.
Yes.
I would just like to point out that not only are these movies surprisingly plausible, they are both, in fact, based on true stories.
I was going to say, I think that one's Gerard Butler's grab for respectability, is my understanding.
Yeah. He has a long way to grab.
He does.
I was disappointed to learn that the forthcoming movie Dream House is not a spinoff of the 1982 game show. About which I obsessed throughout the duration of its 13-week run in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as what... Wait, I don't have anything I'm actually excited about.
You got nothing to pick.
One that did jump out, and Trey referenced it briefly, was I was very curious about The Ides of March, which, in addition to starring Ryan Gosling, who's an actor I really, really like, and having a little bit of that Clooney magic and your Philip Seymour Hoffman and your Marissa Tomei and kind of your awards bait actors, directed by Clooney, who, in addition to being an interesting star, is an interesting director. You know, it's sort of a, looks like a taut political thriller, which, when done well on the occasion that political thrillers are done well, I've got high hopes.
Absolutely.
I can't believe no one has mentioned Bucky Larson, Born to be a Star.
Well, Linda hasn't gone yet.
Oh, sorry.
That's not going to be on my list. I'm just going to tell you right now.
There is a wacky bird-watching movie with
Steve Martin,
Jack Black, and Owen Wilson.
Yes, there is. A wacky bird-watching movie, I think, is going to make Jack Black liking bird-watchers everywhere.
Very, very happy.
Very happy. My first one, unfortunately, I don't think there's anyone on the podcast other than me who likes sports and reads books.
Oh, I know where you're going with this. This was another one I was thinking.
And, well, Mike does, but, you know, Mike's not on the mic right now.
I like sports, but not this particular sport.
Right, but that's what I'm saying is you're no help.
It still looks good. Go ahead.
It would involve page turning. One of the sort of most widely read sports books among sports nerds in the last however many years is Moneyball by Michael Lewis, who also wrote the book that became The Blind Side and some other very fine things. Moneyball is about the general manager of the Oakland A's getting it in his head to expand. He certainly did not invent, but to expand use of sabermetrics in baseball, meaning, you know, stats and his theory.
There's one thing that makes baseball more exciting.
No, but you're being that person.
I am that person.
You're being that terrible person. Like, it has to be all about spirit and poetry and everything, which is great, but
I'm bored with that too.
Well, no, his theory was very, very practical, and it was, we do not have enough money to compete with teams like the Yankees by buying expensive players. We're always going to have less money, so we have to figure out how to get higher value for a small amount of money. So his idea was to find undervalued players in terms of people who were worth more than you could get them for. So he had this whole system for trying to rejigger the way stuff was valued so that you could get a guy who was going to be really good for you and you wouldn't have to pay essentially a true fair market price. So it was a survival mechanism as opposed to I'm going to go be a genius. The knock on this book and the knock on this film has always been that it's a little bit too much making it about this one guy. And
right.
Whereas, in fact, this has been used by a lot of clubs to some degree, and it's not fair to suggest that he somehow invented this spontaneously. But definitely, I found it to be a really good, really interesting book. And it is true that he had a theory that a lot of people at that time, including many sports journalists, were insisting was absolutely never going to work because it, you know, there was this whole, oh, you got to be able to sniff out talent. It was the whole, like, right, don't take the fun out of it by making it about numbers, which is such an anti-sport thing when you think about the fact that games are decided by who scores more runs. So anyway, they're making a movie, and it stars Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill, interestingly enough, which I'm not exactly sure how that works, but the script is by Aaron Sorkin adapting this book. Now, Sorkin, I can go either way. He's written some of my favorite things ever and some of my least favorite things ever. He wrote, obviously, the script for The Social Network, which I thought was, you know, pretty solid. In some ways, I like him better as a person adapting other people's stuff, where he doesn't have to try to create stories.
Or create opportunities to grandstand.
Or grind axes.
Right.
And I like it when he writes a lot of dialogue because he has a very, very fine ear for dialogue. So Moneyball, I'm pretty jazzed about.
Well, one thing that I found interesting about it was when I saw that, you know, that they were making a movie about Moneyball, it's sort of how do you turn sort of the least poetic, least visual, least sort of dramatic element of baseball into a movie. And I think it makes sense that you would have Sorkin write a movie like that, in part because he was able to spin like a fairly compelling movie out of, for example, the creation of Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. And he's a very, very fine writer of dialogue. I think for all the knocks on him, that very stylized kind of dialogue that he writes, I've always really liked. So I'm looking forward to the movie. I will certainly see it. You know, again, Philip Seymour Hoffman's in this too. I don't know exactly how it's going to turn out. I think it could go a variety of ways, as we've said about a bunch of these, but I do expect it to be at least interesting enough to be worth my time.
Yeah, I would put my bet on the side of that winning because, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman is a really charismatic actor. And Sorkin, among his other talents, is a guy who can write about things that most people think they don't care about in a way that not only just makes them worth writing about, but also makes them understandable and communicates what their value is.
Right. Even given the presence of Sorkin, I would have dismissed this film out of hand because it's about baseball statistics. But that was the old Glenn.
Yeah. Glenn discovered Friday Night Lights.
Pre-Friday Night Lights Glenn. Glenn 2.0 is going to give it a shot.
The other thing about this movie, of course, is that my favorite thing Sorkin ever did was Sports Night, which is about sports. So I like the combination of sort of his sensibility with talking about sports and sports nerds. So I'm optimistic. Mm-hmm. I'm optimistic. One that I know I don't think I'm going to probably like, but I know I'm going to pay attention to because I know I'm going to go see it with Barry Hardiman because we already got a date.
Is it What's Your Number?
I Don't Know How She Does It with Sarah Jessica Parker as the harried mother. We're sort of planning to have angry feelings about it, but
it's I Don't Know How She Does It about a harried mother.
Yeah. She's a mom and she has a stressful job and she takes, you know.
Is it about having it all?
She's married. It's about having it all, I guess. It's about how can women possibly balance work and family.
Really?
It's about that very new
problem.
I hear that that's
impossible.
Yeah.
Finger on the pulse, Hollywood.
And who better to make a movie telling women where they stand today than Sarah Jessica Parker? The script is by the woman who wrote 27 Dresses, which I liked and no one else
liked. I was going to say, I think you liked that, didn't you?
I like that movie. She also wrote The Devil Wears Prada, which I think is an okay movie. Sure. So her track record is certainly for movies that I either think are fine or actually like, but the premise of this is such a turnoff. I'm extremely curious about whether I will indeed have the angry feelings that I fear I might have or whether I will be pleasantly surprised.
I'm excited to find out whether the dad is a dolt.
I believe it's Greg Kinnear.
Well, that answers that question, doesn't it?
No, he's
either ruthless or charming or...
He can be charmingly doltish, I suppose.
We'll see.
I'm guessing he will be ineffectual.
Want the Sabrina Greg Kinnear.
Oh, yeah, he's funny. The Sabrina Greg Kinnear is
I like
funny.
Greg Kinnear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
I root for Greg Kinnear.
Oh, we root for Greg Kinnear. People we're pulling for.
That's right.
Anyway, so if you have fall movies that you are interested in, come to the blog and leave your comment or come find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH and participate in our public conversation. So that is our fall movie preview. Our other topic today we're going to cover is guest stars. We have talked a little bit in the last week or two about casting announcements, including the news that David Cross was going to make an appearance on Modern Family. The early part leading into the fall season is always a time when you get a lot of casting announcements about who's going to be on what show and who's going to show up for 4-episode arcs and 5-episode arcs. There was just news today that Eric LaSalle, who was on ER, is going to be on this Friday night CBS show, A Gifted Man, which I personally think is going to be the biggest hit of the fall.
Even though it's on Friday night?
Yeah, but it's
on Friday
CBS.
Nights on CBS.
Oh, on CBS with the Ghost Whisperer.
It's a CBS. Yeah, it's a CBS dead person drama.
Yeah.
And they've had success there before.
Yes, they have.
So we thought we would take a quick run at what guest stars make us tune in or that we would like to see on either in general or on perhaps a favorite show. And because, of course, you know, Hollywood's looking for our advice. You know,
talk about the finger on the pulse.
These people are listening. They're thinking, who should we cast? And they're thinking, maybe we'll ask these people on this podcast.
What does Thompson think?
What does Thompson think? I think that bracelet is typically worn.
WDTT?
Yeah. That took you a minute, didn't it?
It did. It took me distressingly long.
Yeah. But I think that's a popular bracelet on the Warner Brothers lot. Anyway, Glenn Weldon, tell me about you and guest stars.
You know, when casting directors are looking around for somebody to deliver the white hot, searing intensity of a young Brando, just two words. Five-ish Finkel.
Oh, God.
I love Five-ish Finkel.
I love Five-ish Finkel, too.
I love Five-ish Finkel,
great
too.
Great pick.
I mean, you know, the guy, you know,
he's still alive?
He does what he does. He Five-ish Finkles all over the place.
He does. He
finkles
it up.
That's great. He finkles it up.
Please explain for the catsif in the room.
See, this is the problem.
There's going to be
names you might not know.
Well, we got to have a sample, because if people hear Five-ish Finkel's voice, they will know who Five-ish Finkel is.
Yeah, okay, I'll deliver a Five-ish Finkel. He was on Picket Fences for a good long time.
Right.
He's an older...
I think his
most famous TV role is certainly Picket Fences.
Yeah, but he just pops up all over the place.
He also, on The Simpsons, in a TV movie about Krusty the Clown, plays Krusty the Clown.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So I got a bunch here. Just zip through them. Jennifer Coolidge, of course, whenever she shows up in anything.
Absolutely.
It's worth watching. Great Stephen pick. Root, the great Stephen Root
yeah, yeah,
from
yeah.
News Radio.
And I will throw in right here that Stephen Root also has a cameo in the little promo that they run at the AFI before movies. Mm-hmm. They have him and Gary Cole sitting in a little cubicle, and they make a little Office Space joke. And I love that part of the little promo because there are always people who laugh. And I always think, those are people who've never been at the AFI before because they've never seen this before. Stephen Root actually doesn't say anything, but Gary Cole says, if you could just sit in your seat and enjoy the movie, that'd be super swell or whatever he says. Anyway,
Go ahead. While we're at it, Gary Cole, when Gary Cole shows
yes,
up.
Yes, Gary Cole.
If I say the name Saul Rubinek, do you guys know who that is?
I know the name.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He played Beecham in Unforgiven. You'll know him if you see him. I first came to know him on Star Trek The Next Generation, a bit part. You know, people come out of that show and play the villain, and they disappear because it's all about the set. It's all about their makeup. It's all about just this crazy stilted dialogue. He came on, and I can't really explain what he was doing, but he was very naturalistic, but showily so, if that makes any sense. When he's on the screen, he seems to be doing very little, but it's noticeable. So in a show like Star Trek, where everybody's sort of sawing the air and making giant declarations about the photon torpedoes, he had very human interactions. And even though he was wearing, you know, the wacky ear makeup du jour to play an alien, he really makes a big impression. But the person I really want to talk about is Rachel Harris. We all know who Rachel Harris is.
Yes.
Agreed.
Blonde hair, glasses is her look. You came to know her, if you know her at all, from I Love the 70s, I Love the 80s, I Love the 90s. She was a talking head there.
But she was on The Daily Show, too.
She was also on The Daily Show. She's done a rice cake commercial recently.
She's done a couple of failed series.
Mm-hmm. She played Dangle's ex-wife on Reno 911.
She's also the controlling, mean fiance in The Hangover.
Yes, yeah,
that's right.
Maybe the most thankless role this side of Frida Pinto.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. The rap on her is that she always gets compared to Bonnie Hunt just because they have a similar look, but they have very distinct affects. Bonnie Hunt is convivial, right? She's one of the boys. She's cheery.
Right.
Rachel Harris has a different effect. She's very controlled, very self-possessed, very dry sense of humor. That comes across, it seems to have an air of judgment. So, Bonnie Hunt, I wouldn't be friends with in high school, but I would so be friends with Rachel Harris.
Right. And she also, incidentally, is the Diary of a Wimpy Kid mom.
That's right.
Yes.
That's also that.
So, Trey Graham, talk to me of guest stars.
All right. Well, this first one is a little big for this category because she is actually starring in the new Friday Night Ghost Whisperer show. And she's also Jennifer Love Hewitt? Yes. And she's also, from what I hear, stealing a bit of Contagion from some of the bigger brand name stars. But I think that she classes up everything she's in, and she has done a lot of character work lately because she's got kids and she doesn't like to take long location shoots. In fact, I'm told that she turned down the role of the sort of strong female character on Game of Thrones because it would have required two
different people. Who is it?
It's Jennifer Ely, who I think is just a remarkably classy actress. If you watched Adjustment Bureau, she's in two scenes of that as a bartender. But she's got presence and she's got class.
Well, and she was in the old Pride and Prejudice.
That's right.
In the one that
She got nothing to prove.
In the one that Colin Firth was in, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Pride and Prejudice.
That's what I know her from primarily.
She's a terrific actress, and from sort of theater royalty. Mm-hmm. She won a Tony for a Stoppard play called The Real Thing back in the 90s, I think it was. And her mom is Rosemary Harris, the actress from the Spider-Man movies, among other things. Anyway, love her and would watch her do like a minute in any show that she wanted to do. So I'm kind of glad that she's got her own show, and it's probably going to be, as you say, an audience hit.
She's quite charming in that. From my viewing of the pilot, she's definitely my favorite thing in it. I mean, Margo Martindale is in it, so she's also wonderful.
Yeah, I love her.
Yeah.
But Jennifer Ely has a more interesting part, and I like what she does with it. I think you'll like her on that show.
I have a couple of others.
Yeah, go ahead.
Again, getting too big for this, but Peter Dinklage.
Sure.
Favorite guy just because he's Peter Dinklage and he's funny, right? Cillian Murphy with the eyes.
Sure. Should be in everything with the eyes.
Yeah, seriously. And because he can be the sweet, sympathetic character or he can be just chillingly scary.
And he's going to be in the new Justin Timberlake movie. Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried.
What is that movie called?
It's called In Time. Yes, so Trey Graham. Cillian Murphy. Anyone else?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Sure.
Well, sure.
Always works, right?
He's not going to show up on TV anymore.
He might.
Oh, no, I think he might. I think he might.
That's where he got his start.
I can imagine him showing up on TV. I can imagine him showing up on some, like, classy cable thing.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that.
And Alan Tudyk.
Yep.
like that
yes.
guy.
Yes, I'll go along with that one too. Yeah. That's a good choice too.
Can I have a negative? Can I have like a
absolutely.
Like a if this person is a guest star on anything, I will
absolutely.
Automatically not watch it.
I have a guess, but I'll say
I have a guess.
Sarah
too.
Jessica Parker.
Yeah. Mine was Nathan Lane.
That's what.
Oh,
was
Nathan
too.
Lane. I'm so with Nathan Lane. Oh my God.
I was going to say Nathan Lane too. Yuck. That's what I thought it was too. All right, Stephen Thompson, guest stars.
All right. One general rule that I found as I ransacked my mind trying to find just the right person is that I like to have the association of the person with some sort of ensemble that I have loved. Some sort of short, especially some sort of short-lived ensemble. Your Mr. Show, your Arrested Development, your The Kids in the Hall wasn't short-lived, but you know, these people, mm-hmm. you know, Upright yep. Citizens Brigade, people that have been on shows that you have loved,
sure.
and then they have moved on. So a lot of the names, I mean, Jennifer Coolidge was a perfect example mm-hmm. of that. The person that I chose is part of the sort of Christopher Guest mm-hmm. group, but somebody I always love whenever he pops up. He's been in an incredibly wide variety of stuff, and it is a guy by the name of John Michael Higgins.
Sure.
who, if you don't know who John Michael Higgins is, you know his face and his voice. For example, from he's Wayne on Arrested Development and gets to deliver the line, "I have needs. I am a man." He's also
Michael McKean's kimono packing boyfriend in the.
In Best in Show.
Right?
He's in Among
the
Wind.
I love that kimono scene so much. They're talking about how many kimonos they have.
He's also in one of my very, very favorite episodes. He's in several episodes of Community, but he's in one of my very favorite episodes, which is the sort of the introduction of him as the accounting professor who thinks he's the professor in Dead Poets Society.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's constantly walking around being incredibly whimsical. Just love him.
That's a great choice.
I love him, love him, love him. I also want to throw out sort of an honorary vote for Ted McGinley.
Sure.
Now, Ted McGinley, as many people who listen know, is the legendary show killer.
Show killer.
He is the, you know, when we sort of were originally bandying about the idea, we were talking about like new cast members on existing shows. And I immediately, of course, thought of Ted McGinley and how Ted McGinley has killed The Love Boat. Ted McGinley has killed Happy Days.
Sports Night.
He has killed Sports Night. to the point where I feel like Ted McGinley doesn't get cast anymore, even though he's on the entire run of Married with Children, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yep. Well, I think so.
Not the entire run.
Yeah.
Not the entire run. But
he was on the first guy.
But he was on for a significant chunk.
Yes, absolutely.
He did not kill.
He did not
Married
come on and kill Married with Children.
So Ted McGinley has sort of now sort of come to rest in all of these sort of like every mother's worst nightmare, a lifetime special, you know. Mm-hmm. So he does a lot of that kind of stuff. This may be a little bit of inside baseball or whatever, but probably about 12 years ago, when I was at the AV Club, Nathan Rabin, Keith Phipps, and I from the AV Club went down to Chicago when we were all living in Madison, and we sat down and did a roundtable interview with the cast of Major League 3. Now, I have absolutely no, I have no recollection of what, I think it was the opportunity to interview Scott Bakula mm-hmm. that we were excited about, but one of those guys that we sat around and interviewed with was Ted McGinley, and what we found was that he was possibly the most lovable person we had ever met.
But that never surprises me, because that's why you get 100 chances. That's why you were getting cast in little things when you were a young guy. You never became a gigantic, gigantic, huge star, and yet you continue to get cast and cast and cast and cast. It's the same conversation I've had with people about Heather Locklear.
Yes,
I've heard
that about
Heather Locklear. Why do you think people drag her into every single thing that's in trouble? It's because you're clearly not a terrible person, or everybody wouldn't. I mean, at least that's the way I always imagine.
She is, from what I gather, a legendarily nice person.
Who is now marrying or has married my teenage sweetheart, Jack Wagner. That is absolutely the truth.
Aww.
She stole my boyfriend.
Well, anyway, so I would like to throw out there that Ted McGinley does not kill everything he is associated with.
Absolutely.
Well, he's a lovable guy. Let's
excellent.
Go with that.
Excellent, excellent choices. All right. Carrie Fisher did an appearance on 30 Rock a couple years ago, which I thought was very funny, written a little weirdly at certain times, even for being a weird show. But when I saw her at TCA promoting a while ago, promoting her HBO special, she's now been in all these Jenny Craig ads. It seems to me it's time for another good part for Carrie Fisher,
oh, yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think she's very funny. I think she's very odd in a way that I fully embrace. I think she would be a great fit on a show like Community or a show like Parks and Rec or something like that. I would love to see that happen. I mentioned already, I think twice, Sports Night, which is maybe a low for me. But I got thinking while we were talking about this, and I looked him up to make sure he was still acting, but I thought, what the heck ever happened to Robert Guillaume, and why don't I see him on TV anymore? And he does still occasionally act. He did have a stroke while he was on Sports Night, and he was out of commission for a while, which they worked into the show. But he does still act now and then, and I personally think that guy is an absolute national treasure, and I will watch anything that he appears in. So that would be my second one. And then the last one that I thought of, sort of also along, you know, senior figures on shows I've enjoyed or sometimes enjoyed. John Mahoney, who was on Frasier, has managed to be on Hot in Cleveland and has managed to be on Bleep My Dad Says, but has not managed to be on, like, Modern Family or... He was on a season of In Treatment, so he's done, like, the high-end stuff, but that's a really funny and a really good actor. And I feel like it's one of those things where anytime you want to bring that guy on to a show I like, whether it's a drama or a comedy, I will always watch it.
That guy's also a really good voice actor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and he does a good bit of stage work, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that.
I think he does, but I just personally would welcome him back to TV anytime, and I will watch him in anything. So those are my picks. And that brings us to our favorite last segment, on which we always like to close. What is making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week other than returning to our sides after being forced to be in Nantucket?
Yeah, well, actually, as you mentioned, I did weekend in Nantucket. And thanks to the generosity of a friend, and the whole place is like a Ralph Lauren ad, and you know, if you look like me, you go to a place like this and you just feel like a Quiznos sponge monkey the first part. And then, but by the time I left, the island was calling to me, and what it was saying was, you have always been the caretaker at the Overlook, Mr. Torrance. You always have been, and you always will be. That's nice. Kind of what it felt like. But you can't spend any time among people who actually wear their sweaters around their shoulders. It's not a thing. It's not a bit. It's not a costume. I thought it was Nantucket Epcot, but no. That's actually real.
Epcot. Did anybody have spats?
They did. They were wearing the Nantucket Reds. It was a whole thing. You can't spend any time among people like that and not think of John Cheever. Now, people dismiss John Cheever. People who should know better, they think he's just a pale male who writes about privilege and awkward silences at the Hunt Club. And if you think that's what he's about, we talked about Posidon before. When I hear people say that, that tells me you have read about him, but you haven't read him.
Because swimming he writes about, I know.
He does write about swimming quite a great deal. But mostly sex and booze is basically what he writes about. Sex and booze. He doesn't write about privilege. He writes about its decay. He writes about its wasting. His whole thing is squandered potential. So,
what a coincidence.
Yes.
That's my whole thing, too.
It speaks to me. It spoke to me. So there's a biography that came out in 2009 of him called Cheever, A Life. It is 800 pages. It is big as your head. It's by Blake Bailey. It is the best bio of a writer I have ever read, because it does something that is necessary. It is compassionate to the man's many foibles, but it is unflinching. It really looks at how his many faults really hurt the people around him. And it's unsparing, but it's, as I say, it's compassionate. So it's just a great book. If you have any interest in how art and life sort of interact, it's just a fantastic book. So that's it. Cheever, A Life.
Wonderful choice. Nice. Very highbrow for what's making us happy this week.
Well,
bringing the class to the joint. Oh, that's what happens after you get back from Nantucket. Trey Graham, what is making you happy this week?
Puppies, nephews, rainbows, and the opportunity to introduce Glenn Weldon to the wonderful world of the opera, which I have written here.
Which
I have written here with a capital T and a capital O, because that's how much fun it's going to be for him.
For those of you who missed it, on a show a couple weeks ago, Glenn mentioned that one of his blind spots was the opera, and he had some interest in discovering opera, which we all knew was going to come to no good once found out.
No, it's true, yes. I started planning before I even got back from Florida. I thought we would start with something really simple, like Electra, which is a simple 100 minutes of angry dissonant screeching about patricide.
There you go.
And then we could move on to the complicated stuff.
That actually sounds like my kids.
And then the 201 class might be Pelléas and Mélisande, which is not only based on a French symbolist play, but is five acts long.
You're making this up.
No, I'm really not. I know Stephen and Linda have other plans tonight, but fear not, Glenn Weldon. I have some Meyer beer right here in my messenger bag, and we're going to get started. Meyer beer.
Oh.
German.
Not that kind of beer.
No.
So, we'll get you some of that.
Anyway, so yes, I'm totally, totally going to do this.
All right,
that's
I appreciate
great.
That. He did give me a list. I have a list. I have a little list. The Mikado. I have a little list. How about that?
That's true. Actually, I would recommend starting with Jerry Springer, the opera.
Yeah, well, actually, I did see that. That was
I
fun.
Love a friend who gives you a list of homework. Do it all the time. Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
I had so hoped that it was going to be what turned out to be a dashed attempt to acquire a Zaxxon machine for $100 on Craigslist. Mm-hmm. But alas, I was foiled. It's sort of like this John Cheever biography, but in Zaxxon form.
Right.
You know, but unfortunately, I have only grim news on that front. So what I'm going to go with is just some flat-out plug-in for somebody I greatly enjoy and her debut as host of Weekend Edition Sunday, which is to say that our pal, Audie Cornish, just this past Sunday started her first episode hosting Weekend Edition Sunday, did a lovely job.
Audie.
And among other things, in her very first episode as host.
Now you're going to find out why this is really what made Stephen.
I did not know it was, I had totally forgotten that we had recorded this, but in a segment about the anatomy of a Tiny Desk concert, not the in the literal sense, they sampled one of my overhead announcements of a Tiny Desk concert by the performers behind my absolute favorite album of the year. So this particular What's Making You Happy is not just listen to Weekend Edition Sunday with our pal Audie. It is go to the NPR Music website and watch the King Creosote and John Hopkins Tiny Desk concert. Fall in love with the music. The album is called Diamond Mine. If you want to be transported through music to coastal Scotland, this is a piece of music that will do just that. So the fact
can
that
you get me to Jersey.
So the fact that our beloved pal Audie is hosting WeSun is great. Weekend Edition Sunday is great. The fact that Weekend Edition Sunday showcased King Creosote and John Hopkins is great. King Creosote and John Hopkins are great.
Wonderful.
Check out all of those things. They all made me incredibly happy in the last week.
That is a very, very fine selection, Stephen.
Also, Zaxxon, when I do get my hands on her.
That's right. Zaxxon. All right. The problem I'm having with what makes me happy this week, I realize, is that I'm doing so much writing on the blog right now that if something is making me happy in a pop culture sense, I've probably already written about it. So part of this involves you have to kind of page back through blog posts, and you'll see lots of things that make me happy on a daily basis. But the two things I'm going to spotlight this week, the first one I did talk about on the blog, and that's the Tobolowsky Files, which if you have not listened to the podcast, The Tobolowsky Files, it is different from the kind of comedy podcasts that we often recommend. It is usually a single monologue or a pair of monologues. And Stephen Tobolowsky, the actor, a character actor who you have seen in a billion things, speaking of great character actors, just tells stories about his life or about movies he's been in. And it is completely different from everything else I listen to, but I absolutely love it. It's great. They run it through Slash Film, which is a movie website I also really like. So all around, fine project. I'm really frustrated that I didn't start listening to it until now, because now I have to catch up like crazy because they're 50 episodes in. But I definitely recommend it most highly. The other thing, and I did mention this on Twitter, but have not written about it on the blog, is on the same night that I saw at my favorite revival theater, North by Northwest, I also saw The Princess Bride. And I have to say that is a movie where, and I may write something about this at some point, it's sort of been killed by its quotability because it's so quotable that you feel like that movie is so played out, and then you see it and it is alive again.
It is.
And
God, it's a perfect movie.
And everything that is so great that became so quotable is so much better in the movie than it is when people say it to each other in these dried out ways. It was so fresh and funny, and it's the closest thing I've seen. I thought, wow, this is almost like Airplane, in that it's like joke, 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 joke. Everything is a joke. Little things are a joke. Big things are a joke. Almost every line has a joke in it. And it was
so charming, a specific
delight to take something that people think is so familiar that they don't care about it anymore.
Yeah.
It, you know, they'll say, oh, I love it, but they don't get excited about it anymore because it's too familiar. If you actually see it, particularly, I think,
in a big theater
like that. I mean, this was in the beauteous big theater at the AFI. And if you see it like that, all of a sudden you're like, oh, my gosh, I remember how incredibly great this movie is. And that was my experience.
It's not just a funny movie and a tightly written movie. It's a really pretty movie.
It's a very pretty movie.
It's a very pretty movie.
It's a very
not least because Cary Elwes is really pretty.
You know, I have to say, I looked at it and I thought, oh my gosh, I forgot how beautiful he was. I mean, he's aged as we all have.
He hasn't aged badly.
But you look at him in this movie and it's like, wow, I remember why this is the guy who was going to be in the princess
movie. He's going to be the giant star, yeah.
He is stunning in it. And he's also very, very dryly funny in
mm-hmm.
it. It is absolutely fantastic. And if you have it on DVD and you haven't watched it in a long time, which I bet is true of many, many, many of you, take it out and actually watch it because it will come to life all over again, which is what kind of makes movies incredibly great and fun. So that's the other thing that made me very, very happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. That's Stephen. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. That's Trey with an E and Graham, just exactly like the cracker. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. That's Weldon. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music. It is making you happy right now. Thanks to all of you guys for being here. I was happy to see you again.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for being here. And we will see you back here next week.